The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties, and a lot of those cities, believe it or not, have properties for under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first property out of state in the next 4 months, I encourage you to apply to my out-of-state coaching program. I purchased properties out of state, and it's absolutely changed my life completely. The same is possible for you too. You simply need the right information. That's all it takes. My program will provide you the hands-on support and a step-by-step process to buy that first property within 4 months. So go to outofstatemoney.com to apply today. Again, outofstatemoney.com to apply today, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
I know that some of your properties, you have like Section 8 and different programs. And a lot of people don't like using Section 8 in the programs for different reasons. Why does it work for you?
No, well, here's the thing. I would say maybe 60% of my properties now are on housing programs. Maybe. But let me tell you something. Section 8 is not guaranteed, everybody. You hear people constantly bring up about Section 8. You even hear people that are just getting started. Oh, I don't want to play around with tenants. I want to get me Section 8 tenants. Listen, Section 8 is not guaranteed. Let's kill that myth. Section 8 income is not guaranteed. You got to work for that. Not only you got to work for that, the average monies that rental payments that Section 8 pays throughout the country is approximately 15 to even 20% less than market rates. Most people don't talk about that either. What other people don't talk about with Section 8 is that with Section 8, their criteria or their rules for your apartment to be acceptable for rent, you have to maintain that property. And if the property is not maintained, even if it's due to the negligence of the tenant, you don't get paid. They don't talk about that. So people just simply want to believe that all you got to do is get an apartment and put a Section 8 tenant in it and you off to the races. It don't work like that. It don't work like that. Okay, so now as far as Section 8, I don't mind it. Mm-hmm. I don't mind it. But I want what I want for my rent.
Yeah.
That could be between the lines, however way y'all want. I want what I want for my rent. And then I also have relationships with Section 8, the social workers, and I have also, Section 8 is not the only player in town. There's a whole bunch of other programs, housing programs as well. It's just that Section 8 is the one that's predominantly known. But there's so I house other people in other housing programs in my area as well. Mm-hmm. But it's not just the end all be all for me that it has to be Section 8. Yeah. I just want good tenants. I want good tenants and I try to vet them as good as possible so I can minimize turnover.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What are a couple of things you look for when you're trying to find the right tenant?
Can I give y'all the 7 questions that I ask?
Oh yeah, of course.
I'm prepared, right?
Yeah, you're very, very prepared, man. I love this, man, because people always ask about this.
These are the 7 questions. The 7 questions. Damn, I'm giving them too much, bro.
Y'all better be paying attention, man.
Right? These are the 7 questions that myself or my team asks anybody that reaches out to rent out any of my properties, irregardless if it's a housing program or if it's a cash paying tenant. Number 1, what housing program do you have, if you have one? So you don't have to have a housing program to rent for me, but if you do, which one are you with? Because that I know their rental criterias, and then I also have the relationships with the social workers that I can actually call up and ask them, hey, I have this person that just contacted me. What do you think about that person? Or that's a whole other game that I give people on how you utilize the social workers to do the work for you too. That's that, but that's number 1. Number 2, I ask them is how many bedrooms are they looking for? My apartments, minimum I need is a 2-bedroom, but I have some apartments with as much as 4 bedrooms. So they let me know how many bedrooms that they're looking for. Based off of that, the rents are different, obviously, mm-hmm. right? Number 3, how many adults and children? Reason why is that based off of the amount of bedrooms and the potential square footage of the property, based off of how many people they're saying is going to live there, it gives me the option of being able to decide, do I want that many people? Because why would I, for a three-bedroom, rent out to people that is a family of eight, let's just say, mm-hmm. when I could rent out the same apartment to a family of five?
Yeah.
Right? Less wear and tear, right? Number four, very important. Have you been evicted in the last 5 years? If you've been evicted in the last 5 years, don't even bother wasting your time. And you might as well tell me the truth because we're going to do a background check on you, right? Number five, the monthly household income that all of the adults combined generate. I normally require at least a 2.5 to 3 times the rent that I want when you add it up amongst mm-hmm. all of the adults. Number six, are you going to be able to pass a background check? A lot of the times, if these people don't respond to that, it's because it won't be people that you would want to rent to.
Mm-hmm.
So you're able to filter out a lot of the people. And the last question that I do ask is, do you have any pets? And when I do ask, do you have any pets? People are going to get pissed off with me. You people with your ESA, what is that? Emotional support animal letters. Chill out with that. Landlords are hip to that. Landlords are hip to that. So I asked them, do they have any pets? And then based off of their response, I see how I proceed.
Yeah.
You understand? So doing those seven questions is what I developed over the years, because this is what helps you to weed through a lot of the potential tenants without you ever conversing with them.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? And it helps you to stop wasting time conversing. If they answer the questions pretty much to the satisfaction of what I direct my team with, then we go to the next step of asking for their name and their number, maybe have a follow-up conversation with them, and then set up for them to view the apartment, and then do the background check and verify income and other things of that nature. And then if everything checks out, you know, they can move into the apartment.
Definitely. That's hope y'all paying attention. That's good game right there. So I noticed that you do some conversions. So like you'll add bedrooms and you'll make apartments a little bit larger. And of course, this helps you to charge more rent. But what made you want to do that? Because it's something that seems like you do pretty regularly.
So now in my neighborhood, and I would say most of this country, most properties, we don't have the benefit of states like, let's say, Atlanta mm-hmm. or the Carolinas or Texas, where we have a vast amount of land. So I know, you know, people a lot of the times like to talk about new builds and stuff like that. Cool. I'm happy for you. We don't get that opportunity out here like that.
Yeah.
So most of the properties that we have are existing properties that are refurbished. A lot of my buildings that I own were built in the early 1910s, 1920s. If you remember, growing up, a lot of the style was everything was compartmentalized.
Mm-hmm.
The living room and the living room had a wall partition up. The dining room had a wall partition up. All the bedrooms had a, so everything was compartmentalized. So imagine now a lot of these properties I'm acquiring, that's how I'm buying them.
Yeah.
So when I'm buying them, they are a bunch of walls compartmentalized in a bunch of different sections in the apartment, but it's listed as a two bedroom, right?
Yeah.
Most landlords got the attitude of, I don't care. I'm not going to be the one living here. And they'll do the bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And then they expect the maximum in rent. I got a different attitude. I want to produce a beautiful product, but ask top dollar. Right? So what I always try to do is do a blank canvas. Given the fact that I know that this two-bedroom apartment is compartmentalized, am I saying it right? Inefficiently,
mm-hmm.
right? The flow was horrible. I knocked the walls down.
Yeah.
Now that I get the walls knocked down, I got a blank canvas. I just did that recently with an apartment only 3 weeks ago. The new tenants moved in yesterday. It's a two-bedroom apartment that was being rented for $1,000. $1,050 to be exact, a two-bedroom apartment. My two-bedroom apartments in the area that I'm in normally rents for approximately $1,500 fully renovated. I already recognize, because I own a bunch of multifamilies in the area with the same layout, I can get a four-bedroom out of this. I can get a four-bedroom out of this, and I'm not talking about with small bedrooms, beautifully flowed. I'll show you the video. Beautifully flowed four-bedroom. I was able to get that done. So I was able to convert an apartment that was originally a two-bedroom that would be rented at best if I left it as is to a $1,500 a month. I was able to convert it legally, proper egress, closets, size, etc., to a four-bedroom, and I just got the place rented out for $2,050.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.